Welcome, everyone to Radio EduTalk. This is the final show of this academic year. Just about to enter into a six-week break, hopefully like many teachers out there. And we'll be back again in August with a full program of weekly talks. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Ken Muir from Education Scotland. And Ken's going to be talking about the inspection process. Today's show is going to last roughly about 30 minutes. If you're listening to the live stream, then you can, of course, email Ken with comments or questions, and they'll come direct to me. And the email address is edutalker, that's edutalkr, @hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're listening live and you're on Twitter, you can put a comment or question and just include the #EduTalk. So, Ken, welcome to the show, and it'd be great if you could just maybe start off by introducing yourself and maybe something about your career in education to date, and then if you just go ahead and introduce today's topic.
Okay, thanks, David, and thanks to those of you who are listening to this. I greatly appreciate the opportunity through EduTalk to share our expectations of inspection and what an inspection is about. I've actually been in an HMI for about 18 years, and prior to that I worked in local authorities as an education advisor and taught in schools in Ayrshire before that. My current remit is oversight of our inspection policy in the new Education Scotland, as well as having responsibility for primary, secondary, special, all through curriculum for excellence, and also GLOW as well. But today's focus is on inspection, and I recognise, and my colleagues in Education Scotland who are HM inspectors recognise, that inspections can sometimes be quite create a degree of anxiety. It used to be a brown envelope that came through the door. It's now a box with briefing and questionnaires and such like. But part of me wanting to do this with you today is to try and reassure you about inspection. When it comes to inspection, what inspectors are interested in is exactly the same as many of you as teachers or head teachers or senior managers are interested in, and that is making sure that youngsters in primary or secondary or whatever sector they're in get the best deal possible. And there's a lot of mythology about inspections, but fundamentally what we are interested in is finding out how well youngsters in your school are learning. And I often say to teachers myself, when I'm in as part of a lesson observation or looking at an episode of learning and teaching, I'm not really interested in the teacher. You'll find us down pretty much on our hands and knees talking to the youngsters, trying to get a sense of what it is they're getting out of the lesson that they're getting. So what I want to do is really just take you through what an inspection looks like today. It's changed a lot over the years. I know some folk that I speak to have got long memories and have been in education for a while talk about inspections that they had 10 or 15 years ago and how it was wasn't a particularly enjoyable experience. I'm hoping that some of the recent changes that we've made to inspection have made it a much more engaging exercise, and fundamentally one which is designed to try and support improvement. You as practitioners are interested in that. We as inspectors are also interested in that. The number of reasons why inspections have had to change, and the most recent changes have taken place because we have to respond as a public body to various policy initiatives and so on. We've had Hart report a few years ago, the CRERA report, which was talking much more about inspections being proportionate and targeted. We've had legislation like the Public Sector Act, where there's been more of an expectation about user focus in any scrutiny activities, and users for us tend to mean parents in particular, but also staff and youngsters in schools. So we've had to take account of that. Of course, Curriculum for Excellence has moved on apace, and therefore inspection has to take account of that. And we also respond on an ongoing basis to feedback that we get from inspections, whether it be through professional associations like SSTA and EIS, with whom we have regular contact, but also through the questionnaires that we give at the end of inspections to all head teachers and also to members of staff in 10% of the schools that we inspect. So So the model of inspection that we've got, as you said, is one that has come about in the course of the last few years, and it was allied to us producing a couple of documents which are available on our website. One is our principles of inspection, and we have a document there that talks about our 10 underpinning principles of inspection, and these relate to areas like independence, impartiality, capacity building and improvement, critically having an inspection that builds on school's own self-evaluation, and hopefully conducting those inspections with transparency and with mutual respect. And one of the other principles is the extent to which we are responsive in an inspection, both to the kind of context of the school and to what we find in the course of an inspection. I think one of the big changes in recent years has been the extent to which inspections are now much more bespoke to the school. I know a number of years ago there were concerns that it was a one-size-fits-all model of inspection. I mean, I would argue very strongly that we do try hard to reflect the story of a school in our report, and one of the ways that we do that is by trying to make re-inspection much more individualised and much more reflective of the kind of school that we're going into. And I'll say more of that in the course of this presentation. I want to kind of talk you through the processes that are involved in inspection. I want to begin by what happens in advance of an inspection. One of the changes we have made is that we now invite local authorities to help identify they would like to see benefit from an inspection. And that's been quite an interesting exercise because our district inspectors will list from our intelligence of the schools that we might want to inspect probably a year in advance, and we have a discussion with the local authority, and we have quite an open discussion about that, and we try very hard to come up with a final list. That final list, however, can change subsequently. We may find that head teachers change, or there's maybe been a particular issue in a school, usually, I have to say, in relation to staff illness or family illness of members of staff. And we take all of that into account. We may make last-minute adjustments to the list of schools. We previously had a generational cycle inspections, whereby every primary school was inspected once every 7 years and every secondary once every six. Because of the CRERA recommendations, we've moved to a much more proportionate sample of inspection, and that sample is in order to deliver what's required for reporting on the National Performance Framework. As you may be aware, there are two particular indicators in the Scottish Government's National Performance Framework that relate to inspection. One where the government is working towards improved education standards through the measure of our reports, so schools receiving a positive inspection report across the board in primary, secondary, special and all through, and the same kind of indicator at this time for preschool. And what that's meant for us has been that we have had for a number of years now, for the 3 years that the National Performance Framework has been in place, we've had the three reference quality indicators, 1.1, which is improvements in performance, 2.1, learners' experiences, and QI 5.3, about meeting learning needs. Those are the reference QIs which will indicate or otherwise whether a school has had a positive inspection report. And for a positive report, we're expecting a minimum of a satisfactory evaluation on the 6-point scale in each of those three quality indicators. Of course, in addition, we have two other quality indicators that we evaluate as part of the inspection process. 5.1, the curriculum QI, and clearly curriculum for excellence, increasingly significant in that particular evaluation and the extent to which the school is making progress in implementing curriculum for excellence. And the other one, which again allies to where we've moved with school inspections, that's 5.9, improvement through self-evaluation. So having received the pack or the box, and sometimes boxes, indicating the inspection will take place, Head teachers receive a briefing note, there's a staff briefing note, parents equally receive a note that the school is about to be inspected, and we ask the school to send into us a number of documents in advance. It's a much reduced list to what we used to get previously. We ask for things like a copy of the most recent standards and quality report or annual report, a copy of the school improvement plan, and all of those we expect to be in place anyway. So it should simply, and it very often is, simply a case of taking these straight from the school's electronic files. We need to know the names of the teaching staff and the details of the responsibilities. Folk who are responsible, for example, in key areas like health and well-being. There's a child protection or safeguarding pro forma which we ask the school to complete in advance, because we consider that a very important part of the school's job to assure the protection of children in their charge. And critically, and different to previous inspections, we include what we call a self-evaluation summary paper. And that self-evaluation summary paper includes a grid that we ask the school to complete. And it basically asks the school to identify what evidence they would bring to the table of how a school is responding to the three key questions that the inspection is designed to answer. And that those questions are: how well do children and young people learn and achieve? How well does the school support children and young people to develop and learn? And how does the school improve the quality of its work? We had a very significant public consultation on the school inspection framework about 18 months ago. We received about 3,000 responses from parents, from students themselves, from head teachers, from staff, from a whole range of folk out there in the wider world, about what an inspection should try to focus on. And the school, the self-evaluation summary form asks a school in advance to think about where they are in regard to answering those questions themselves, what it is they have done through self-evaluation to effect improvement, what evidence they would bring to the table, and very importantly, and this is important for anyone who is about to undergo an inspection, bringing to the table what self-evaluation has shown that schools and departments need to do in order to improve further. And that, we've found, has been an area that schools have been quite reluctant sometimes to do. Some schools have taken the view that everything's fine in the school and it's up to inspectors to find out what's not going well. In reality, if self-evaluation is working well and the QI 5.9 improvement through self-evaluation is being well used, then schools should be using that to identify areas that need to continue to improve or need a bit more work done. And it is important that's brought to the table at the beginning of the inspection. So the new inspection model that's been in place for over a year now is very much predicated on the school's own self-evaluation. And on the Monday, we invite the school, usually the head teacher and senior managers, to meet with us to have what we call a scoping meeting. And this is an indication that what we're trying to do in inspection is not give a sense that we're doing it to a school or to a senior management team or to a particular department. But what we're doing is we're starting with a shared agenda, and we invite the school to bring to that scoping meeting some of the areas that they would want us to focus on as part of the inspection. Clearly, we'll have done our homework in advance. We'll have looked at the intelligence that we have in the school. We'll have looked at the range of data that's available to us. We'll have looked at the questionnaires that have gone out to parents, to staff, to pupils, to non-teaching staff. We'll have done all of that analysis. But we're keen that the school gets an opportunity to bring to the table themes or areas that they themselves would like feedback on through inspection. So we're trying to make it a much more shared agenda. So the inspection is something that's done with the school as opposed to being done to it. And we try very hard to get the broad view of learners in the course of the inspection. And In secondary in particular, we've removed entirely the inspection of individual departments, because if you remember in the previous inspection models, those of you who have been inspected, we used to inspect always English and maths and two other departments. And although there was a scientific way of choosing those based on a statistical model, it could very well be that just by law, two of those departments happen to be top-performing departments, or obviously two of the departments, the two remaining departments, might have been less well-performing departments. What we're focusing on, because we know it makes the biggest difference, is learning and teaching. There's two things that affect learner achievements. The leadership of the school and the leadership at all levels, and what happens within the classroom, that direct learner-teacher engagement. These are the two things that have the biggest impact. So we took the decision a year ago that we would no longer inspect discrete departments in secondary, and we'd apply the model that we apply in primary, where we look at learning and teaching across the school. Apart from the fact that it doesn't single out individual departments and issues that have been raised about that, it also ensures a much wider coverage of learning and teaching across the school. And it means, therefore, that we're much more able to touch the totality of departments that exist within a school. What we also try and do is in looking at the school's profile before an inspection, we may recognise that there are a particularly significant or looked after youngsters who are in that school, and one member of the inspection team will take the role of being the champion of that group of individuals and will be paying particular interest at the extent to which the needs of those youngsters are being met, or indeed others, for example, youngsters who have autism, other kinds of groups of youngsters who might be represented in the school, those individual groups being championed by individual members of the inspection team. The inspection team continues to be made up of HM inspectors, but also, as many of you are aware, and some of you who are listening may actually be associate assessors. These are individuals who are practitioners, usually very high quality practitioners, who go through an interview process with us, who we train up and who we give shadowing experience to, and these then become fully signed up members of the inspection team. Some inspections will have a health and wellbeing inspector on them who's looking with a particular eye to health and wellbeing in its widest sense across the school. And we continue to have, in almost all of our inspections, a lay member who takes a view or a perspective from parents and pupils, and whilst they are a full member of the inspection team, their main focus is on trying to get a handle on how the needs of parents and how the needs of learners are being met within the school in regard to things like school reports, communication with the school, communication with the parent council, and so on. And I think it's also worth maybe stressing at this stage that at the end of each inspection, we have, and again it's available on our website, developed a self-evaluation tool which we call our PRAISE framework, which requires inspectors to undertake a self-reflection and evaluation of their own performance as part of the inspection. And that sits alongside the questionnaire returns that we get from head teachers, and as I said earlier, on a 10% sample of schools, so that we get feedback on our performance on inspection, because again, we recognise that inspection is probably a very significant part in the life of a school in a school year or over a number of years, and it's important that we learn where we can from every inspection that we undertake. So basically, an inspection, in the pre-inspection period, as I say, 3 weeks notification for secondary schools. It's a two-week notification period for primary and resource centres. The slightly longer period of notification in secondary is because we run the CLV inspection in all non-denominational schools alongside the school inspection. And we recognise that the array of CLV partners and are making arrangements for them to be involved in inspection is a much more time-consuming exercise than 2 weeks would allow. Although I think as a general trend, we are moving towards a shorter period of notification, something that came through very strongly from the consultation that we had with parents in particular. We're not yet at the stage of no notification inspection periods, unlike south of the border. And I rather suspect that we may not get to that stage, although I do think that over the piece we may find a further shortening of the notification period over the next few years. One of the things that we experimented with were online questionnaires, and we found that these worked very well with teaching staff, non-teaching staff and pupils. But because of accessibility issues, it was much more difficult for parents to access the inspection questionnaires online. So we're going to continue at least for the next year with hard copy questionnaires pre-inspection. And these are very helpful to us, and we use them as kind of prompts to spark discussion and also to inform the agenda we might want to follow. Inspections will start in primary and secondary at lunchtime on a Monday. As I say, there is a scoping meeting with the managing inspector, possibly also some other team members, head teachers, senior managers. We invite the local authority to send along a representative. It's usually their local QIO. And we spend time looking at those three questions and what evidence the school has brought to bear in respect of those three questions and any areas of focused attention that we would want to pursue as part of the inspection. At the same time, the lay member meets the chair of the parent council. They may meet parents at that particular time. One of the things that we have tried to do in the new inspection model that's run for the last year is encourage parents to talk to parents beyond what they said in the questionnaires. We've offered a much wider number of slots in the course of the inspection in order to access as many parents as possible. Every Monday, the managing inspector will speak to the staff as a whole, and that's an opportunity genuinely for anyone to ask questions or to raise any concerns or express any anxieties that they may have about the inspection. What we do find is that this can be a reassuring process, and it's quite legitimate for folks to raise issues if they have particular concerns about inspection during that period, and to be clear about the kind of inspection process and how they're likely to be involved in it over the course of the next 3 or 4 days. At the time, if it's a non-denominational secondary CLD team meeting, will take place. That prepares the ground for day two of the inspection, which is the Tuesday. It usually begins with a brief team meeting for the inspection team, just to make sure that we're clear as to what the programme for the day is. And the real focus on the Tuesday is getting into classes. That's what we want to see. As I said earlier, we know that it's what happens in the interaction between the teacher and the learner that makes the most significant difference for those experiences. So we want to focus on getting into as many classes as possible. The lay member may very well conduct some of their interviews with groups of parents. Some of the inspectors may want to talk to members of staff. The health and nutrition inspector, if they are part of that team, will be in on that day as well. And at the end of that day, we meet with staff and have a discussion as part of our professional dialogue about what is beginning to emerge, albeit from a single day of activity. Usually the lay member will only spend a day in the school. He or she will probably feedback to certainly the managing inspector, sometimes also to the head teacher. And I think it's worth saying at this point, we're also interested in staff coming forward with what they consider to be good practice and things that we shouldn't miss. We always invite head teachers and senior managers to tell us that at the scoping meeting. But again, either as part of the Monday afternoon meeting or at some point in the Tuesday, to bring to us things that they would particularly want us to see because of the sense that this would be something we would be particularly interested in from a good practice point of view. And one of the things that we do as part of that good practice is perhaps where we feel that it is significant, we may come back out and film that for some of our website material, for example, the Journey to Excellence, which contains a very high number, in excess of 400 video clips of good practice that we've collated over the last 2 or 3 years across a whole range of sectors to try and give practitioners like yourselves an opportunity to look at what constitutes, from our point of view, the very best practice that's happening in Scotland schools. The rest of the week, the Wednesday, Thursday and possibly into Friday morning is pretty flexible, to be honest. One of the things that we do try to do is encourage staff by having a very open door approach at lunchtimes. If folk are wanting to come either to show some of that good practice or to talk about any of the issues that have been raised in the course of the inspection, we encourage that. The health and nutrition inspector may very well give their feedback on the Wednesday. They're no longer as part of the inspection team. And at the end of the day on the Wednesday, usually the inspection team will have a fairly substantial team meeting where they'll consider the evidence that's been brought to bear in respect of the three key questions that we're trying to answer. And we'll begin to have some discussion about the QI evaluations. I'll talk more about the report later, but I think it is important to stress that what we're intent in doing in the new style of letter report that we now write is tell the story of the school. And for those of you who have either been inspected or if you look on our website, you'll see that we have taken out the quality indicator evaluations from the report, and we put that on our website along with the questionnaire returns or if it's a secondary school attainment data, the additional inspection data, because we were very conscious as part of our consultation into the school inspection framework that very often what parents and what schools focus most on is what QI evaluations did I get for the five QIs. It is one of the reasons why we dropped the leadership QI a number of years ago. We found that folk were hanging on waiting for that one statement about that one QI, whereas what we are trying to do in inspection is support improvement, promote improvement, and tell the story of the school as it is, as an individual establishment. So the rest of the week, as I said, pretty flexible. We will share our findings on the inspection and have a professional dialogue with usually the head teacher, senior management team, and often the QIO or a member of the local authority will come back and we'll hear that. And again, we're not necessarily majoring to any extent on the QI because we're trying to present a coherent picture of what our professional judgments are about what is working well and what needs to work better within a school. Once the inspection has been completed, we ask the head teacher to share the main findings of the inspection with his or her staff, and we then go through a process of drafting the report, drafting up the record of inspection findings, the RIF, which is usually a fairly substantial document, which we make available at the point of publication of the report. We make it available to the Director of Education, to the head teacher, and for the first time this year, in the course of the last year, to the chair of the parent council. Now, when we went to consultation, parents were very keen to learn more about the outcomes of the inspection. And in tandem with a reduced high-level summary letter report, which we've moved towards without the QIs on it, we also make available to the director, the head teacher and chair of the parent council the entire record of inspection findings. And our sharing of it with the chair of the parent council is to encourage him or her to speak directly and in the first instance to the head teacher to find ways in which parents themselves can support the improvement agenda in schools. We all know that parents and family have got a significant influence on the extent to which the learning of any one individual youngster is successful or not. And therefore we think it is only right, and again going back to some of the recent legislation, the PSR Act, the duty of user focus on us as a public body, we think that we've found a way in which the chair of the parent council have access to the RIF, not to reproduce it, not able to copy it, but having access to it and having a discussion with the head teacher and the school is then in a better position to inform parents about what their role might be in supporting school improvement. At the end of the inspection, whereas in the past we either came back for a follow-through inspection or we left well alone, we now have four possible ways of continuing engagement with the school. One is we continue to have further engagement. If we have some concerns about the school, we may come back and do a further inspection. We may not leave it for 2 years, we may do it in 6 months, we may do it in a year, depending on what the findings of the inspection are. We may agree that there's no need for us to have any further engagement and that any further improvement activities can be undertaken by the local authority. We also, as I hinted at earlier, may come back and want to look in more detail and capture in some way the very best practice, innovative, creative practice that we've seen. And again, I would urge you to look at the Journey to Excellence part of our website with not just video clips, but also, and these can be very helpful for school CPD, but there are about 20 or 25 CPD packs available on key topics that relate to everything from assessment to the implementation of curriculum for excellence, which I'm sure all of you who are listening will find some use for. So that's the third possibility of our continuing engagement, is innovative practice visits. And equally, we may come back and with the agreement of the school and with the authority, look to undertake some kind of support or improvement visit. And none of these latter two are mutually exclusive. We could go into a school that's a very high-performing school. We're very happy with the performance of the school. We may want to come back and visit for getting more in-depth into some good practice or innovation. But equally, if there is an area of the school that we think needs further support and the authority are in agreement, we may come back and put in a subject specialist or a curriculum specialist in primary to help support improvement in that particular area. After the inspection, we go through a process of drafting the report. As I say, there is a set of quality assurance arrangements that we apply. We invite the school and the local authority and the chair of the parent council to comment on our draft report. We'll take account of any additional evidence that the school might wish to bring to the table, and then we finalise the report and usually publish it about 10 weeks after the actual inspection process itself. One of the things that many of you might be interested in knowing, one of the innovations in the new inspection, because we are keen to try and build capacity during the inspection, as well as having associate assessors, and we see them as a key way in which we support improvement and build capacity, is to ask the school to identify a nominee as part of the inspection. And that nominee may be the head teacher, it may be a senior manager. In many schools, individual members of staff have been invited to be nominees, and we invite them to come with us and to take part in the episodes of learning and teaching that we're observing. And that has proved to be particularly fruitful for us, but it also allows the school to see our kind of the standards that we're expecting in respect of episodes of learning and teaching, and it allows the school then to have a better benchmark against national standards of what might be expected. I think the critical message to get over to you all is that inspection is about improvement. It's important you see it in that light. In my former existence, I was inspected a couple of times, and I know that some of the concerns and anxiety that you have about that. I would urge all of you who are listening, if you're about to be inspected and you know about it, or you're concerned or worried you might be at some point in the future, to be reassured that really our main focus is on ensuring that the youngsters in the school get the best deal possible, and that we try very hard to take account of the circumstances in the school and the context of the school. And bear in mind that inspectors themselves and certainly associate assessors have all been teachers themselves. Many have been senior managers and have held posts of responsibility either within schools or within local authorities. And we know what a difficult job teaching is and can be. We recognise well that there are some areas of Scotland where it is a much more challenging shift to be a teacher. We take all of that absolutely into account, and we focus on the needs of the learners and the improvement in learning that, and the benefits in learning that youngsters can get from their school experience. So I hope that gives you a reasonable flavour, David. I know you're still there, of what an inspection is about. I hope it reassures you. If you are interested in finding out more about inspection, there is a lot of material on our website. As I say, I would direct you particularly to the principles of inspection document and the school inspection framework document. If you want to delve more deeply, then you can go into some of the briefing documents that exist within our website as well. And if anyone does have any query on the back of this EduTalk broadcast about inspection, then I'm very happy to respond to any queries, either by email, ken.muir@education.gov.uk, or directly by phone on 01506 600 240. I hope you found that helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ken. That was so and incredibly helpful, no doubt, for classroom teachers as well as school leaders and school managers. I've just got a couple of questions, just I suppose for the last 5 minutes or so. Just before I ask the first of these, would you mind just repeating the email address? I think there's actually a little problem with the broadcast just in the middle of you reading out that.
No problem, David. ken.muir@educationscotland.gsi.gov.uk.
Okay, thank you. And I'll just say, if anybody's listening live or indeed to the recording, you can also put comments or questions. I'll be forwarded on to Ken, and the email address for the show is edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, if you just include the hashtag EduTalk. The first very brief question, Ken, is just about improving through self-evaluation. We're talking about QIs there, and obviously everybody knows it, we deserve school. What's the current kind of status of IGEOS? Have we also had a new version, or is there another new version in the pipeline? And also, is it likely at all that the QIs or the particular focus QIs will change in the near future at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. It's one we get asked quite regularly, David. I mean, how good is our school? The current edition of how good is our school is still the basis against which we undertake our evaluations. And I think the level illustrations are still particularly helpful there. But as you're aware, and as folk listening will be aware, the education system has changed quite significantly in the course of the last 5 or 6 years since the current edition has come out. And particularly in respect of curriculum for excellence, there is a time scale for the implementation of curriculum for excellence. It's not our time scale. I mean, it's one that's been set nationally. And what I've had to do is to adjust the expectations of inspection in line with the expectations of curriculum for excellence. I only last week issued an updated inspection advice note to all local authorities, telling them of what our expectations were, particularly in respect of the curriculum QI 5.1 and the QI 5.9 on improvements through self-evaluation, as to what our increased expectations were in those areas to reflect where we are currently and where we hope to be with curriculum for excellence. So what I would suggest, David, is that listeners need to look both at IGEOS, but also and particularly paying attention to the updated inspection advice note. That again is available on the website, it's there for download. And what I've tried to do in this edition of the update, this is the third update in the course of the last couple of years, is give a bit more in the way of advice as to how schools might approach curriculum in the context of excellence, and also QI 5.9.
The whole kind of Donaldson agenda and your career-long professional learning, etc. It was interesting when I was reading one of the documents that came out during the second half of 2011. It spoke about maybe inspectors engaging with staff in a school about some of the recommendations in Teaching Scotland's Future, the Donaldson Report, and obviously that ties in with the work of the National Partnership Group and the CSUB, the report, which is imminent. I'm wondering if you can say a bit about whether that has actually found its way into engagement within inspection weeks. You know, have teachers been routinely asked about, you know, how things are changing, or, you know, starting to look into the quality of CPD in terms of in-house and working with external agencies, or whether that's something that will be ramped up, so to speak, or introduced once the National Partnership Group's group reports are published?
Yeah, and it's a good point, David. I mean, one of the things that we have done in the course of the last year, and we signalled it in the briefing note to head teachers, is to be aware of the fact that we want to engage in some discussion about where they are in terms of the CPD that they offer and the support that they offer to new qualified teachers and probationer teachers, and that's an important part of the Donaldson agenda. And again, this year, we didn't refer to that in reports last year. We didn't make any other commitment other than to have a discussion about it. But obviously there are expectations from the Donaldson report, as you say, about the quality of support that probationer teachers and newly qualified teachers get within schools, the quality of their CPD, and the engagement that staff have in kind of monitoring and evaluating their ongoing performance. And that is something that, to use your term, we're ramping up. We're looking at in more detail as part of the forthcoming year's worth of inspections. And I think it will continue in that vein. I mean, I think next year I foresee me writing a further updated inspection advice note, which again will go with the kind of timescale for the agenda to compress. It will also align with the timescale for the implementation of some of the National Partnership Group recommendations.
Just a couple of questions to finish up, Ken, and I'm aware you'll need to get away shortly. You spoke about the composition of the inspection teams, and that seems to have changed in recent years with nutrition advice and such like, health and wellbeing. Can you see the composition of your average inspection team changing further in the future? And I'm thinking about, you know, some discussion more widely about the involvement of other professionals in education and schools generally. Might that influence the future composition?
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, David, I think we've probably taken a step in that direction with the nominees that I talked about, because, you know, I think for too long inspection has been seen as a bit of a kind of closed door. Practitioners, unless they read what's on the website, or if they happen to know someone who's been inspected, you know, there still has been a bit of an uncertainty about what is about to befall me when an inspector comes to call. I mean, one of the underlying principles is about transparency, and all of the evaluative tools that we use in inspection and forming a professional judgment, like how good is our school child at the centre, how good is our CLD, they are all both devised in partnership with the practitioners out there, but they're the same tools that we would expect folk to be using as part of their ongoing self-reflection and self-evaluation. So there's absolute transparency there. And I think by putting what we've put on the website, although we've always done it to a degree, I think we've been very open about what an inspection process is trying to do, and it's one of the reasons why I agreed with you that I was so keen to do this, because I think the more folk get to know what an inspection is trying to do, the less likely they will have anxiety about it when the box arrives. So I think our move into inviting schools to identify a nominee or nominees is some way towards that. I would, however, remind listeners that, you know, associate assessors, of whom we probably had, well, we certainly a few years ago had as many as about 400. I'm not sure if it's quite that number just now. But those are practitioners who are coming from the day-to-day job of teaching and managing in schools. And most of those associate assessors get an opportunity to experience an inspection at least once a year, some more often, depending on their expertise. So I think anything that we can do to allay fears about inspection and engage folk as fully as we possibly can, bearing in mind that when we inspect, you know, there's a day job to be done there. Teachers are there to teach the way, so to speak. So I think anything that we can do to try and engage folk more in it, then absolutely. And you know, myself, my colleagues are regularly out doing staff development activities about inspection. You know, we support the likes of professional associations, EIS learning reps, reminding them about what an inspection is trying to do. So I think the more we can take opportunities like that to spread the message about what an inspection is trying to do and what our intended outcomes of an inspection are, the more folk should genuinely feel involved in the process itself.
Just one final question. It's been very helpful with the kind of main links that you've provided in most and digital form, along with the audio when it was up on the website. Can you just enlighten me? I mean, I can recall from down the years reading several HMI reports on technologies for learning, for example, and the Fintech Moncrieff area of interest, the kind of role of attribution of charter teachers since the start. Are we going to have more of these kind of style of reports? And also kind of in with that, you spoke earlier on about 400 video clips of good or best practice in the 25 CPD packs. Are these easily obtainable? Are they is it easy? What you specifically?
Yeah, I mean, those are all available on the website. If you go into the Education Scotland website and if you click on, if you follow the Journey to Excellence link, David, you'll certainly get all of those. Sorry, you broke up a wee bit, David, in the first part of your question, which was about what?
Yeah, sorry about that. I recall over the years reading several HMI reports. So we've had one, I remember one a couple of years ago on, you know, technologies in the classroom. I recall one on, you know, the contribution the charter teachers had been making in the first few years of that particular scheme. Are these reports, these type of reports, still regularly being produced, or have we moved on to something else?
Well, no, I mean, I think there will always be a need for us to put into the system thematic reports or curriculum area specific reports of the kind that you're referring to. In fact, one of the things that we have been doing in the context of Curriculum for Excellence is we've given an undertaking that in any year we will carry out 2 3-18 tasks looking at two of the 8 curriculum areas in Curriculum for Excellence. And in September this year, and it will be heralded at the Learning Festival at the end of September, we will publish a 3-18 report on social subjects or social studies that is in Curriculum for Excellence, one on sciences. And the idea there is that every 4 years, therefore, we'll be able to give a kind of mini state of the nation in respect of those curriculum areas. Equally, as issues come to the surface, I mean, we've had one very recently on the publication of the baseline data for the National Performance Framework, issues about learning in particularly disadvantaged areas. There is a theme that could very well, and I think is likely to spawn a report from us at some point in the course of the next academic year. So I think there will always be an attempt to try and provide both subject-specific reports into the system and reports on thematic issues of the kind that you referred to.
Thank you very much, Ken, for appearing in the show, and I know we've gone slightly over time. I really appreciate your contribution, and although we're maybe starting to wind down towards the summer holidays, hopefully many people will, many regular listeners will pick up on this excellent audio, and very helpful, of course, and hopefully over the summer months as maybe people catch up on previous shows. So thank you so much again. I'd just like to point out that when we come back in August, we've got some fantastic shows lined up. We've got Laurie O'Donnell, Graham Thompson, Deirdre Robson from the Leonardo Effect and Dr. Zoe Williamson talking on a whole range of subjects, and these are just a few of many shows that are lined up for the second. Just like to finish by thanking everybody who's taken part in Radio EduTalk over the last few months, and I again thank you, Ken, for appearing today.